we saw over $40.5 billion of net flows into ETFs here in Canada. That is almost triple last year's pace at the same time. So when you look at it from that perspective, even though there was already market volatility, you still saw very strong flows going into ETFs. What we've seen from a growth perspective or a new launches perspective is mostly equities that we're seeing. 70% of the new launches have been equities, 20% has been in the fixed income space.
Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, and this is Insiders Capital. Joining us this episode is ETF industry expert Ron Landry. Ron is Vice President, Head of Segment Solutions and Canadian ETF Services at CIBC Mellon.
This is the Insiders Capital Podcast.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AdvisorAnalyst.com or of our guests. This broadcast is meant to be for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed in this broadcast is intended to be considered as advice.
Ron, welcome. It's great to have you on the show. It's great to see you again.
Thanks, Pierre. Glad to be here. Appreciate the time, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. Ron, to kick things off, tell us about your career. For those of us who don't know you, your role at CIBC Mellon, and what's got you excited for 2025?
It's hard to believe I've been in the financial industry for 30 years now, 30 plus years. Started out my career in fund accounting back in at Altamira, one of the largest direct no-load asset managers when they were still around. Worked my career through there, did fund accounting, corporate finance, compliance, and then moved on to a startup where we did back office for investment funds, hedge funds, doing fund accounting and record keeping. I was their EVP, Chief Operating Officer. And then my last 2 years there, I was the president before we got acquired by CIBC Mellon. I've been with CIBC Mellon since 2009. A bunch of roles while I've been there. And currently I am responsible for segment and product solutioning. And I'm also the head of our Canadian ETF servicing business at CIBC Mellon. What really has me excited for 2025 is the continue innovation of the Canadian marketplace here around ETFs. Both our clients and other issuers are always finding ways to bring innovative products to market that meet the needs of investors at the particular point in time. Very good at finding thematic or interesting trends that are pushing the envelope in allowing investors to get access to maybe products or asset classes that would be very difficult for them to do individually.
You mentioned that in the earlier part of your career, you were in fund accounting. I think on the outside, it might sound like not the most exciting kind of work or the kind of work that most people don't want to do, right? It put you right squarely in the middle of the industry in terms of the kind of knowledge and insight that you were able to learn and pick up and cultivate. I just don't want it to be something that our listeners underestimate in terms of where you've squarely been involved in the industry and what view that gives you of what's happening in the business. Ron, we're transitioning into what appears to be a new regime. Maybe that's very obvious. Changes that have taken place in the markets, in the bond market, in equity markets have been volatile. We have a new administration that is really churning things up. And without getting into so much of the market commentary, because I think those of us who are in the business have a pretty good idea of what's going on and why it's going on. But have you seen any note, like the first quarter of this year was very strong. And then suddenly for April, as of April 2nd, of course, things took a turn. Maybe we can talk about what was happening beforehand, because the first quarter of 2025 was extremely good. Were there any interesting or notable developments that you saw in ETF flows or in ETF issuance that might indicate how investors were reacting or adapting before the end of the first quarter? And are there any insights that you might have about what's happening post? Let's first talk about a review of the...
Sure. And up until, this will be the end of April, the first week of April, so April 4th, we saw over $40.5 billion of net flows into ETFs here in Canada. That is almost triple last year's pace at the same time. So when you look at it from that perspective, even though there was already market volatility creeping into the, even throughout March, you still saw very strong flows going in into ETFs. What we've seen from a growth perspective or new launches perspective is mostly equities that we're seeing. About 70% of the new launches have been equities. 20% has been in the fixed income space. The amount of flows since the new administration, so since January 20th, has been $32.9 billion in assets. So people are still investing into ETFs. From a flow perspective, we've seen global equities and U.S. equities do fairly well. Now, what that will look like post-March, it will be interesting, but we did see a pullback on Canadian equities. So it looked like people were looking to broaden their horizons and invest in more global equities, but still very strong flows into money market, high interest saving accounts, and high yield products. And that may be something related to market volatility, desire to get yield, maybe a reason for the, for that. But when we look year over year, there seems to be a little more emphasis in those type of products.
Yeah, I think there was a lot, there was a view on how the new administration would change policy. And in the beginning of the year, there was a very positive view on that. There was markets hitting new all-time highs.
Yeah.
So for equity investors, it was a terrific year and a terrific quarter leading up to where things obviously started to change in another direction in terms of policymaking. So there was like, there's this weird mix of uncertainty where the market is climbing this wall of worry. There's this optimism. There was some FOMO in there. There's all these things happening all at the same time, simultaneously. Yeah. We've got this mixed bag of sentiment, which was really driving things right up until April 2nd. And there's obviously been a lot more volatility as well. So we know what happened now. We know there was very strong flows into equities.
Yeah.
There was some mixed feelings about fixed income, and understandably, because yields were fluctuating to the upside because of some inflation concerns. And then they suddenly turned and like the 10-year U.S. Treasury went from 4.8 to 4.2. And it has been oscillating. But so it's understandable that some of the interest in fixed income, like I look back to some past conversations, and given where longer term bond yields were in January, it was very hard. I think it would have been very hard for advisors or investors alike, whether they're advised or not advised, to say, I think I'm going to buy some duration. I think I'm going to buy some longer term bonds for my portfolio, because those were the assets that were actually going down while equities were hitting new highs.
Yep. And so, I don't disagree. I think it's going to be interesting what's occurred recently and what does that do for central banks and how do they manage the situation. Obviously, interest rates have been coming down as inflation has started to ease. Do these tariffs now increase inflation again? But if you raise interest rates, does that put more pressure on individuals and in where they spend their money? And so it's going to be interesting how central banks deal with this uncertainty from a tariff and interest rate perspective, inflation. I think it's a sort of a perfect storm for a central bank to try to figure out what the best balance is in order to make sure the economy doesn't end up in a recession.
Yeah. And the ETF market has made things very interesting. I think we talk about how, you know, now is probably one of the best times or the best time to be an advisor. And that's because there's a solution for almost every problem out there. And new solutions keep coming on into the marketplace to help advisors and investors solve their investment dilemmas. What are some new and interesting ETF-wrapped solutions that you see coming to market or that have recently come to market grabbing interest these days?
Yeah, as we look at what's been launched so far this year and probably dovetailing into what was launched towards the end of last year, we're seeing an increase in single stock ETFs. I'm not sure if it's trying to combat the onslaught of CDRs that have come to market here in Canada with the CMB BMO, because those products have really taken hold in the marketplace and have actually grown quite well. And then you have BMO, who launched a huge family of SPDR-backed index products. And I think that was maybe an opportunity. BMO saw an opportunity where maybe SSGA wasn't looking to come into Canada as an issuer and partner with them to bring those products to market. So it's an innovative way to bring a large U.S. Issuer their products to the Canadian marketplace without having that issuer actually come to Canada.
That was all GIC sectors.
It's interesting. It's one of those things where, you know, currently there's no way, there's nothing stopping a Canadian investor from buying those products on a U.S. exchange, but definitely wrapping it within the Canadian regulatory environment is probably going to gather some traction there as well.
And there's tax considerations too, right? And for Canadian investors buying U.S. domiciled ETFs versus the same ETFs domiciled in Canada, it's far more advantageous for Canadian advisors to and investors to get into the Canadian listed ETFs.
Yeah, and in my mind, when people are buying Canadian products, these products are meant for Canadians. They're meant to fit into our registered plans, our RIFs, our RESPs, our TFSAs. They are really meant and they're built to purpose built for Canadians. When you're buying products that are outside of Canada, one, they're not developed or created with the lens of a non or a Canadian. There's very little protection that has garnered to Canadian buying foreign products. The reason why we have a regulatory regime that allows for point of sale and material disclosures that are specific for Canadians, that are these products are meant to be held within our registered type products, is really to protect investors. And the reason why these products are coming to Canada in a Canadian wrapper is to really satisfy the Canadian need.
It's been interesting to see what's happening in the U.S., where we've seen a lot of issuance of 2X and 3X exposures to individual stocks, which are highly speculative. But in Canada, what's been interesting is that the innovation is more on the side of how can you, okay, you want to own a particular stock in your portfolio, how can you make that experience better? Not more speculative, but a lot of what we're seeing in terms of issuance of new ETFs, of offerings of new ETFs, is single stock with covered call overlay.
Yep. Add some yield. Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely, and this is what I like about the Canadian marketplace. The issuers are always looking at how to bring products that is fitting a gap that, whether we know it or not, it is a gap, and they're very good at bringing innovative products that are going to fill that gap and maybe, you know, just add another tool to somebody's ability to make a stronger, more robust portfolio and investments.
Yeah, absolutely. Were there any new ETFs that came into the market that you thought were extraordinary or very interesting, or you took pause and thought, that's interesting, that's really neat? Was there anything like that for you?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, there's a lot of interest with crypto again, with the current administration really strong on crypto products, digital assets. We definitely saw a significant increase in issuers looking at what other coins they could bring to market. So I think we'll be seeing more products coming to market around that. And I think as the U.S. regulatory environment changes, maybe we'll start to see some changes here in Canada on what's going to be permissible from that perspective as well. There's very strict rules on what products can hold crypto and how they can be structured and whether the mechanism for them to be green-lighted. So we'll see if some of those changes come through in the coming months and years.
Yeah. And is there, Ron, anything that you're seeing in terms of new ETFs or existing long-running ETFs that are getting increased bandwidth right now or increased interest from investors?
I think cover calls we're on a two-year run right now, have really picked up. Attractive posted yields has really, really driven flows into those products. And I think people are looking for yield. Whether that will continue and people will look for more capital preservation type products. Who knows? But you'll definitely cover calls have done really well in the last 2 years. I think I want to go back to, it must have been early 23, if not late 22, when I was on a panel and Raj Lala said cover calls are going to be the go-to for that following year. And he was not wrong.
Interesting. What about alternative strategies, ETFs? How's that segment shaping up? And do you see any particular direction that things are moving in?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'd say alternative ETFs have had a slow start. When the rule introduction in 2019 appeared, everybody thought it would take off. And, you know, we within a year, we'd be through combined mutual funds and ETFs, probably $100 billion. I'd hate to say that we were far off that mark. We're maybe halfway there. But just in the last year alone, we've seen a growth in alternative ETFs in assets, about 53%. So amazing. We're up from 12.6 to almost 20 billion in assets. We have 27 issuers that offer alternative ETFs in the marketplace. That's well over half of the issuers in Canada. We saw about a 25% increase in the number of ETFs that are in the alternative space. There was about another 30 last year that were launched. I think there's been about another 2 so far this year. Considering the market volatility, I think we're going to see issuers come into market with products that are going to help guide and improve the investment position of investors coming months and years to come. I think it's definitely been a slow start. And even when
it's a good reason for that, right?
Yeah, 100%. We talked about it day one that it was going to be an education process. And it's just going to be ongoing. Unfortunately, every alternative product is not the same. So it's really one, understanding what the investor's needs are, and then find the right product that fits that. It's not just, oh, I want an alt fund. What is it that you're trying to achieve? And picking the right alternative fund for that need, whether that's protecting against downside, whether it's trying to hedge against something. Some of it is leverage. If you're looking for leverage, you want to, you know, you think you're bullish on something or you think something is bearish, but you really truly need to understand what the investor is trying to achieve and make sure that the product that you're sticking in is the one that is actually going to achieve that goal.
Now, I 100% agree with you that the runway, the education runway is long for alternatives. It takes time to learn about these things and to absorb the knowledge and to also be able to translate it to your client, to your end client. If you're an advisor looking to do that with your model portfolios, your client portfolios, it's also been, I think, just to give alternatives a fair shake. It was also the last decade was also very trying for diversification. Traditionally, we've had 60-40 portfolios. Equity markets continued to increase in value. Yields on bonds continued to drop. Those were very favorable conditions for a very long time for the two traditional core assets. But now that we've come into this period, and we had the period marked by COVID, followed by 2022, which would have helped with the uptake in alternative strategies, only to see 23 and 24 be very strong years for equities and bonds again. And so what I'm saying is it hasn't been easy for advisors contemplate or to introduce alternatives to their end clients because of the risk of tracking error or line item risk that they would normally have in their reviews, where the stocks and bonds are up and the client says to the advisor, why do we own this alternative when we could have just stuck with the 60-40 that we had? And so that would be another reason I would point to why alternative strategies haven't had as much uptake as you would have might have expected or thought they would. But going into this period forward, things might change. It could get very interesting for liquid alt strategies and other absolute return type strategies that advisors can now introduce more and more easily to their clients' long-term strategy.
I think the regulators have been, obviously they came out with the rule, but they've been very open to granting exemptions to improve the overall offerings that are out there. So I'll give them kudos on that. It didn't come out of the rule and said the rule is the rule. They've been very open to listening to issuers, understanding the nuance that they're trying to achieve, and then granting exemptive relief where need be, and understanding that sometimes the rules are a little stringent. And so how do you offer something to investors that still protect them, but give more latitude to the issuer?
Ron, what are some of the more interesting trends or policy or things that are happening on the horizon that you see that will affect how investors proceed or how advisors work with ETFs?
So we're expecting to receive the results of an ETF rule review that the CSA had started, I want to say, about a year and a half ago. We're expecting to see something next couple of months. I think the regulators have been, I'd say, pleasantly surprised on how well our markets work with ETFs. We have a different regime from disclosure perspective, the U.S., and they have not seen any deviation in spreads or lack of the ability for markets to work efficiently and effectively, even though we don't have the same disclosure full visibility as the U.S. So that was a pleasant surprise. I think it allows our market to continue to strive to bring ETFs to market that aren't just passive. They can be fully active. We can bring innovative products. We can allow asset managers who historically would have been maybe a little reluctant to come into the ETF space because they had disclosed their secret sauce, they might not be so keen. No, I think it just really highlights the effectiveness of our ETF ecosystem. I think one of the areas that we're a little concerned about as an industry is utilizing tickers as a way to inform investors of the type of product they're buying. We don't know that it's the most effective way of doing that and may put us to a global disadvantage to other markets because that doesn't exist there. So definitely something that's creeped up in the last couple of months that this is something that regulators are looking at, and you know, as an industry will be trying to figure out how we can best work with them to come up with the same result, but maybe in a different way, maybe not through tickers, but through other ideas on how investors could be better informed. On top of that, we have total cost reporting. So this is a carry on to CRM2. It's now CRM3.
Right.
It is really to bring visibility and transparency to investors on embedded fees that are paid to managers or funds. So we think that's going to be a really good thing for the ETF industry. So for the first time, investors will have on their statements to, one, understand what they paid in embedded fees, and then they'll have as well a chart of all the investment funds that they've held and what the fund expense ratio was. So a clear indication of the one product versus another. I think both investors will see the difference in cost, and advisors will then be in a position that they'll have to start explaining why they have their client in maybe a little more expensive product versus a cheaper alternative that may have the same investment strategy or outcome. We think this could be a real catalyst for even more flows into ETFs when the rule comes into effect. And then over the last year, we've had a couple of proposed rules come out. One was the codification of crypto exemptive relief that's been looking to be codified. So we expect to see that soon. There was a comment period in my discussions with the CSA. We don't expect any changes from the initial proposal. And then the regulators are looking to do modernization of the continuous disclosure. What we'll see is the mutual or MRFP going away and a new fund report coming to market. It's supposed to be more user-friendly. It uses behavioral science type logic in why it's displayed the way it is. It's supposed to be more condensed. There's been lots of comments that have gone back to the regulators. So we'll see how they react to the comments that have gone back. And then when I look at the ETF industry overall, I think the Canadian industry is strong and is continuing to grow. We see issuers coming to market. We see more product coming to market. Flows are strong. You know, just 10 short years ago, we were 6% of the investment fund industry, and now we're at 20. And if you actually looked at the assets that are held outside of Canada in foreign ETFs, if they actually came back to Canada, ETFs would be almost 25% of the investment fund industry. So we expect that number to continue to grow. And who knows, maybe in the next 10 years, we'll be 50%+ of the market. So I think the ETF industry here in Canada has a bright road ahead of it, and it's definitely not stalling in any way.
Yeah, and that's an incredible thing to contemplate, actually, Ron. It's a growing pie. The pie is getting bigger and bigger every year, but the share of that growing pie, the second derivative of that, is that the ETF,
yeah,
that the ETF share of the growing pie is growing too. So we're not just talking about a straight line increase in assets. It's more of an exponential increase in assets against a growing base.
Yeah, and I think when I look at the investment landscape, asset managers, issuers, their goal really should be to bring products that are going to meet specific investment objectives, and that's their core, you know, strategy or whatever that is. The type of vehicle it comes in, whether it's a mutual fund, whether it's the ETF, whether it's a mutual fund with ETF series or ETF with mutual fund series, for me, that's just the way that the investor is going to buy and what they're comfortable with or the advisor is comfortable with. I think we're going to start to see a lot more products that are mutual funds that are adding ETF series or ETFs that are just to make sure that they're hitting all the distribution channels that are out there. That doesn't mean that every product is right for an ETF. If it does, I think that's an excellent way to increase the scale and reach that an investor or an issuer has in reaching investors.
I want to say we've had numerous conversations with some of the leading US-based ETF analysts. And what was revealed in some of those conversations would be very interesting, I think, to Canadians. And that's that although the US ETF market is substantially larger for obvious reasons, it's a much bigger market, it's a much bigger economy, it was Canadians, we always have this reminder conversation, it was Canadians who innovated the ETF in the first place. But it doesn't just stop at the initial innovation of the ETF. It continues, like we were the first, it was our market where the first bond ETFs were issued. It was our market. You can go up to the most recent, if you want to talk about crypto, we were the first market in which a crypto ETF, a spot crypto ETF was introduced.
Yeah.
And so while the US may have what appears to be a lot more options at times, we are actually the Canadian market, the Canadian ETF industry is actually the innovator, the key innovator. And very often what came from those conversations was that US ETF companies were looking at what we were doing in Canada as an industry, the ETF industry was doing in Canada, to see what ideas they could get that they could grab from our activities.
Yeah.
That they could replicate on their side. But we've always been ahead of the curve. So I just want to point that out, because I think if there's an urge at times, this like pre-existing urge to get into US listed ETFs, you should actually take a look at what Canadian domiciled ETFs are offering.
Yeah. And I'd say, Pierre, like, I think we probably have I think we're so innovative because of the regulatory environment we're in. I think most jurisdictions actually have different rules for ETFs and mutual funds. Our regulators have been great in the sense that they were able to incorporate both mutual funds and ETFs within 81-102. It's allowed for innovation to be spurred within our investment fund industry, and that's been great. I think if we had a separate rule for ETFs, I don't know that we'd be as innovative as we are. And I think as long as our regulatory partners continue to be collaborative with us, see the value in having a single rule when it comes to governing investment funds, I think we will continue to lead the globe in the innovation that's going to come to market.
Ron, thank you so much for that comprehensive overview.
Thanks, Pierre.